WLAK 1260 AM Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. Hollywood's Actors Union is joining the Writers Guild in the first joint strike in more than six decades after talks with studios and streamers broke down. SAG-AFTRA President Fran Drescher.
They came back with so little that I began to feel like we were duped.
Members of the Writers Guild have been on strike since May. Sources tell ABC News former President Trump's son-in-law Jared Kushner and former aide Hope Hicks testified before a grand jury about the January 6th insurrection. Attorneys for Hunter Biden have sent attorneys for former President Trump a cease and desist letter, alleging the former president's rhetoric online could lead to injury. Extreme heat in the South nearly cost John Longoria his life. 63-year-old collapsed while mowing his lawn in Houston.
I drove myself to the nearest fire station, and once I got there, they checked me out, and I was having a heart attack.
Experts recommend taking a lot of breaks, dressing for the heat, and drinking plenty of water. This is ABC News. The United Nations says a mass grave has been uncovered in West Darfur. They say it contains bodies of nearly 90 people allegedly killed by Sudanese parliamentary forces and allied militia. A top media executive offering his thoughts on the Hollywood strikes.
Disney CEO Bob Iger called the labor unrest very disturbing, telling CNBC writers and actors are already adding to a disruptive set of challenges facing the business. Iger, who recently extended his contract to lead Disney, the parent company of ABC News, said SAG-AFTRA and the Writers Guild of America were not being realistic in their demands. He said he understands the goal of a labor organization is to get the most for its members, but that it will have a damaging effect on the whole business. Brian Clark, ABC News.
Contractor working on the Ambassador Bridge connecting Michigan to Canada lost his footing and fell, plunging 150 feet into the Detroit River. He survived. Paramedics call him fortunate. Andy Field, ABC News.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
For Lake Air 1260 AM, I'm Jimmy Cuska. Here's what you need to know in Amory. One person is dead after a crash in Polk County yesterday. The sheriff's office said the crash happened at the intersection of Highways 8 and 46 north of Amory. A car turned in front of a semi that was headed west on Highway 8. The driver of the car was flown to a hospital, but later died due to injuries from the crash. This is the fifth traffic death in Polk County this year. In a special session last night, the Eau Claire County Board voted to get rid of its chairperson. Nick Smyer was removed as board chair on a 17-9 vote. After the motion, discussion focused on how he handled the investigation into spending by the county's Department of Health Services, which was $3 million over budget in 2019. The board is also set to discuss the county administrator position in closed session, but postponed the agenda item to tonight. A new board chair will be named on Tuesday. And drought conditions got worse in most of the state, but got slightly better here in western Wisconsin. The latest drought monitor shows that 90% of the state is experiencing drought. From the Civic Media News Desk, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
Broken bricks, falling fences, damaged doors. Gorilla Glue, of course. Gorilla Glue is incredibly strong, 100% waterproof, and bonds virtually everything. Gorilla Glue, for the toughest jobs on planet Earth.
The Todd Alba Show.
The most elitist scorn towards average people exists within sort of that conservative far-right ecosystem.
We're a couple of dudes who used to be Republicans. We were Dwight Eisenhower, Ronald Reagan, Tommy Thompson, Scott Klug Republicans. This Republican Party you got now with Robin Voss and Devin Lemieux, the Republican Party at the top, why don't start banning books, for God's sake?
Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app, the Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
When you take the iconic Wienermobile and you call it the Frankmobile, come on, that is terrible.
The Kraft Heinz Company announced the name change to celebrate the brand's 100% beef franks as the company debuts a new recipe. Well, no more lips and other things, I guess.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Devil's Advocates Radio.
The entire light beer industry is under attack from the right at this time. Apparently, that they no longer have women in bikinis selling the beer.
I would suggest, and this is on the Fox Entertainment Network.
I believe it's the Fox News. Well,
well, I just hope I don't get to the Captain Morgan and Diet Cokes, man. That'd be a sad day.
The Devil's Advocates Radio with Dom and Crute. Weekdays 4 till 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
A guy named Bill out in Econowoc. Bill's got some thoughts on that.
Yeah, thanks for talking about what you're talking about right now. Your station, you raise the bar high for integrity. You are a community radio station, which means you look out for all the citizens in the state of Wisconsin.
Daily conversations about Wisconsin's latest headlines and stories. Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Somebody about it. We need to be talking about it more. All these things actually have an impact.
Yes, they do. Talk to everyone you know about it. Drive them crazy, just the way we drive you crazy. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, we come to you from Chicago, Illinois, home of this year's Netroots Nation. A couple of thousand progressive activists coming together to talk about issues of how they're going to change the world. A bunch of fire-breathing do-gooders wanting to make the future a little bit brighter, a little bit cooler, as climate change being one of the issues front and center. We are in the exhibition hall with, you know, I think there's 100 or so exhibitors here showing their wares, signing people up to be activists, activating, engaging. Doing all of the good work. Now, here over the next couple of days, what we're going to be doing here on the program is, well, we're going to be talking to some of the folks coming through, sharing some thoughts, why they're here, what they're doing, what their group activity is, and maybe how we can come and join along. As I said, you know, climate change seems to be front and center in a lot of the exhibitors. A lot of the people that we've talked to here, climate seems to be front and center, especially considering yesterday, as we were coming into town, a tornado warning was going on. There were people flying in worrying about being diverted because it got a little dicey, especially a little north of the city, heavy rains, winds, and this is the windy city anyway, but yeah, when you get a tornado watch coming through, maybe something to be thinking about. And look, over the last several days, you know, the news has been just full of, you know, the planet is burning, the red bells are ringing, the sirens are going off, that something has to be done. So over the next couple of days, you know, we're going to be talking with folks who have ideas, thoughts, you know, where are we going to go? Are electric vehicles the future? Is electrification of the nation the direction forward? Are there different ideas, better ideas? Lots of that. And look, we're going to, you know, we've been here probably an hour, and the number of people who have come by and said, hey, you know, love the show, love what you do. So we're going to have a bunch of folks
people that don't get on the program podcast. You know, we're going to throw out as many interviews as we can over the next several days on our podcast channels so that, you know, you pick and choose and get through what you need. Now, I love Chicago. I love coming to the Windy City. I love the fact that some of the best pizza on the planet. We got in yesterday and partook in a bit of that. So going to be an interesting couple of days. For me, you know, these events are important. These events are important to bring people together, to share thoughts, to share ideas, to network. So I'm assuming we're going to hear a lot of, you know, how can you take this silo thinking? How can you take, you know, this individualist, hey, I've got this idea. Hey, I've got this issue that's important to me. I've got this thing that I'm working on. And expand it to make other people who have similar thoughts on different issues care about each other's issues. And come together and figure out how we do move the country forward in a better way. I'm sure there's going to be some moments where we don't always agree. I got a bunch of emails from folks who, you know, just yesterday were angry at me having someone on for the Centrist Democrats group. I think we have to have those tough conversations on how do we get to a place where we can say, you know what? We're going to make this planet worthy of being passed on to future generations, that we're going to fight for education so our kids have better opportunities than we did in the future, that we're going to fight for health care that makes sure that everyone gets access to the best quality health care possible, that we're going to have infrastructure that's worthy of being passed on, that we have a planet and an environment worthy of that. That's kind of why we're here. We're going to talk to young people, old people, cross section of folks showing up. There are a bunch of activities that we're going to try and get folks to talk about. The panels are, you know, I think there's like 150 some odd panels. They've got a whole bunch of stuff. It is for me, and the reason I come to this is it's an educational opportunity. Like I said, I may not agree with everything. I'm going to talk to as many people as I can, and we're gonna have really good back and forth. But it's about being at least open-minded enough to entertain other ideas. You know, I've done conservative groups like this. I've done, you know, these kind of progressive liberal groups. I think it's important to bring those arguments out, to bring those conversations out, and to share them. Now, from everyone tuning in, the hope is that you send me some feedback. Say, hey, I agree with this. I don't agree with that. And we get some back and forth. Because I think it's, you know, in these environments, it's easy to silo up. It's easy to get tunnel vision and go, you know, this is my view and never you're going to move me. I think having some back and forth makes things a little bit stronger. Once you have to defend your position and your idea, it makes you think it through a little bit better. So that's kind of where my mindset is over the next couple of days. We're going to enjoy our time here in the Windy City. But we're gonna learn a little bit, and I've been doing Netroots now for, it's gotta be, you know, 15 some odd years. We've been coming out to this. The first one was in Rhode Island. I don't even remember when that was. We did San Jose in 2013. We did Pittsburgh last year. We've done a bunch of these over the years, and every time we come here, it's an excellent opportunity to grow, to network, to talk to people. So I'm hoping you enjoy it again. I hope you'll give me some thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Tell me what you think. If you've got thoughts, questions, ideas, by all means, reach out. We're going to take a quick break back here from Chicago at Netroots Nation. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1995. That was the day 2,500 pressmen, reporters, drivers, and clerks went out on strike against the Detroit News and the Free Press. Both newspapers had created a virtual monopoly in 1988 by merging their advertising and circulation departments into the Detroit Newspaper Association. Even as the DNA raked in record profits, they forced years of concessions, including wage freezes and layoffs. When the association implemented a merit pay raise system, the newspaper guild voted to strike. Five other unions, including CWA and the Teamsters, soon followed. The newspapers, however, were ready. Just before the strike, they cut off the dues checkoff. They also contracted with the company Alternative Workforce to provide scabs. They also hired private security guards from Huffmaster and Vance International to enforce the scab herding. A solid union boycott cut revenues for both newspapers. On August 19th, hundreds of strikers stopped scabbing until police attacked the picket lines, breaking arms, and arresting at least four. Then, on Labor Day weekend, thousands of strikers and supporters successfully repulsed police forces amassed from across the state to break up the picket lines. By mid-September, both newspapers were forced to airlift the Sunday edition until strike-breaking injunctions limited picket lines. Over 100 had been arrested over the course of several weeks. Unable to stop production, strikers gradually returned to work until the strike was finally called off in February of 1997. In his two-volume set, Workers in America, Robert Weir notes that many labor activists criticized strike tactics. They argued direct action to stop production should have been the priority rather than boycotts and political pressure. Once the strike ended, the DNA claimed all but a few had forfeited their jobs.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Back here at Netroots Nation in Chicago, we were walking around the hall, and look, my kids, they got the goodie bag full of all the grabbables, fans and, you know, nail things and pens. I think I'm going to have so many pens. Way too many pens to go through, but everyone gives something away. So you take it home and you remember, hey, I saw this exhibit. Maybe I should call them when I get home. One of those exhibits is getting people involved, getting people, you know, maybe off the couch or on the couch, engaging in campaigns, helping, well, as I say, getting the fire-breathing do-gooders out doing action, but maybe from the comforts of your own home and maybe not even in your neck of the woods. That's why I've asked Erica Chomsky to come talk with us. She's the Chief Strategy and Partnership Officer at Shire. GetShire.com is the website, and she's going to tell us exactly what Shire is, what it does, and, well, how it can bring folks together. Erica, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks so much, Rick. And I will say my favorite so far has been the water bottles. I am about to be very hydrated.
That seems to be a thing now. Everyone needs. When I was a kid, nobody worried about being hydrated. You drank out of the hose when you got thirsty. Now we've got bottles specifically to fill up in cute little stations.
It's pretty great. And, you know, let's thank the left for the Clean Water Act while we're at it. So Shire is a digital campaign office lobby. And here's what I mean by that.
Wow, that sounds technical.
It does.
You've
it
already
does.
Scared me.
I know.
You've already scared me.
It's a lot of words, but basically it's bringing volunteering home. So a lot of times when you want to lend your voice and your support to a cause or a campaign or something that lights your heart on fire, you're going to go on their website, sign up, and they're going to say, great, we'll call you.
And they never do.
Well, if they're very well staffed, you might get a call in a week. But in the meantime, they want to say, can you give me $5? Well, I don't have $5. You know, I don't make that much money. What I have is my time. And so I think we turn a lot of people off. I think we send a lot of people away.
Right.
I would argue,
not to cut you off, yeah. I would argue your time much more valuable than the $5.
100%. I think the current valuation of volunteer time is hovering somewhere around $27 an hour. That's not pocket change. So what if there was a world in which we were able to invite everyone in, to give everyone...
Hold on.
Yeah.
Let's see. What if there were a world? So tell me about this magical, mythical new world that is possible.
All right. So in our world, every single voice has a home. You sign up to volunteer and we say, fantastic, welcome. We want you here and we're going to put you to work. Your voice will be heard. So you can, you know, sign up and be asked your questions, and then immediately you're going to be welcomed in a political campaign by the candidate, in a nonprofit by an organizer or an activist, and we're going to put you right to work and give you what you need to know to show up. And one of the things that I'm really excited about this program is that it gives us a way to reach rural voters. I mean, you've been at Netroots all day. You will be here for the next few days, I imagine, getting more water bottles and pens. And you can see around the room, there's a lot of folks trying to do good work down here. And it is also hard to show up for every single person, especially when we're looking at, you know, places outside of cities. So what if there was a way where people who didn't live in a city or who worked all day and had to, you know, drive to work listening to your show, go to work for 8 hours, come home listening to your show, what if they were able to show up for 20 minutes a day? What if they didn't have to be asked to give 8 hours at a time? How many people would come home and stand up?
No, I mean, look, I'm a huge supporter of engaged, active citizens taking part in campaigns, and this sounds like a great opportunity. Especially, look, I live in a very red area, probably one of the most red areas in the country, and I know a lot of people who are Democratic-leaning who say, you know, it's not worth getting involved in a campaign that's not going to matter.
Yeah.
So it sounds like, and maybe help me here if I'm wrong, but it sounds like some people go, look, I want to be effective. I want to make a difference. You know, I'm going to take this fire breathing do-gooder inside me and change the world and actually see something happening. So are you saying that you can take folks like in my neck of the woods and put them into campaigns, not in their backyards, but maybe competitive campaigns across the country, or I think you said nonprofits, things that you could see something positive? Is this what I'm getting?
I'm saying I think there are millions of people out there who want a better world, and I think if we ask them, they will come home. I think, you know, if you're in a red area and you want to volunteer someone else, here's a way to do that. I think if you're in a red area and, frankly, you don't maybe want the woman next door seeing you walk into a Democratic campaign office. So you can do it from the safety and comfort of your home as you can, when you can, based on what you are able to give. And I think it's going to be really beautiful to see.
So walk me through this process. You say you're going to go to this website, getshire.com. Is this what it is?
Yes.
So we're going to go to this website. I'm going to go, hey, I want to go. I want to change the world. So you're going to go through and do what? What am I going to see?
So you're going to come into the website and you're going to say, hello, I would like to volunteer. I would like my voice to be heard. And we're going to say, great, fantastic. What do you want to do? Tell us, a couple of clicks, right? And we're going to say, cool, welcome. Let's get to work. And you're going to most likely see a video welcome from the candidate or from the organization. And then we're going to say, cool, you signed up to text people. So here's how you do that. And one of the I want to digress just a minute, Rick. One of the very cool things about Shire is that it has security built in. You know, when we're talking about bad actors in the political sphere or in the organizing sphere, I think it's really important that people know that they can be safe.
Right.
So we've built in end-to-end encryption. We've built in verification. And it, I hope, makes it a little more comfortable for people who may be afraid to publicly support something to be able to lend their voice.
Right. So
to their
you're when you're texting somebody, it's not coming from your phone.
Correct.
It's not
coming from
number.
Your phone. And on the campaign side, we've used a verification process to kind of make sure, you know, you're this guy and all the messages are encrypted, which means, you know, I don't want to get too into it, but like, God forbid, these are going to be safe. And I think that's especially important when we talk about organizing for queer rights in the South, women's rights in the South. You know, we're getting to a point where that might become important.
So
anyways, let me walk you back through.
Please do.
All right. So we're coming in. We're saying, hey, I want to show up for my people. We're saying, great, fantastic. What do you want to do? And then we're going to show you how to do that. We're going to welcome you in. And the very first thing that happens is someone's going to say thank you. Someone real from the campaign or the organization is going to say, welcome. We are so glad you're here. Thank you for showing up. We needed you, your skills, your talent, your time, your voice, your heart. I like the fire-breathing bit, so I'm going to be using that the rest of the day. Thank you, Rick. And then you get to work, and you're going to get the information you need to do that. So on a couple of levels, that's going to make it a lot easier for that volunteer to be directed, to stay focused, and to not get overwhelmed, which, as anyone who's volunteered before knows, all of a sudden, your phone is beeping. There's Slack notifications. I think we're all a little tired of Slack after several years of remote work. I know I am. I want to log out of Slack at the end of my eight-hour day, and like, we are done here. And maybe your phone is beeping at you while you're at work. We can't have that. So you get the information you need, and then from the campaigner organization side, it also makes it easier to give that information, because we're not going to have to be worried that we're overwhelming people, that they're getting lost somewhere in a channel.
No, it sounds great. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show with Erica Chomsky. She's the Chief Strategy and Partnership Officer at Shire. Website, getshire.com. We'll get links out on social media how you can take a look at this. Now, it sounds great from the volunteer standpoint. What about if you're a candidate? And you know, as a candidate, look, one of the hardest things is getting that team of volunteers who are going to go out there and charge into the abyss for you. This is a way of helping almost build that out of a nationwide pool of folks who may want to see you do well, right?
You're doing my lines here, Rick.
Okay, sorry.
No, I love this. I think my favorite thing is that you and I met about a minute ago, and already you get it, and that's how easy it is, particularly from a campaign side.
No, the reason I get it is because I've often asked, why doesn't this exist? I've asked people, why hasn't this happened? Yeah. You know, it's like a lot of this. I've been doing this 18 years now. So people come to me, I got this great idea. And you go, oh, yeah, that thing I thought of 18 years ago? Yeah, you got around to that. God bless you. So happy. So this is one of those things that I've, you know, over the years have asked, how come we haven't done this? And I guess you guys have been doing this for a while, right?
So our founder and CEO was a federal campaign manager in Iowa when COVID hit. So obviously COVID pretty much killed in-person volunteering. And what she realized was that, you know, we were, as a movement, cobbling together all these different solutions, trying to find something that worked. And she also has a tech background, so she was uniquely positioned to come up with a solution to this, you know, very common problem. And she was able to conceptualize, here is what people want, here's what they want to do, here's how they want to go about it, and here's what we as candidates and campaigns need. And really kind of remarkably quickly put those pieces together and assemble a team to build it.
No, that's great. And look, you said your founder has a tech background. What about those of us who don't? I mean, you know, again, a lot of people, that's a barrier. You know, what about people who aren't as tech savvy as your founder?
Yeah, absolutely. So this thing is bonkers easy to use. It's very intuitive. It's very simple. And in addition to that, it is designed with accessibility baked in. So, you know, we spoke just now a little bit about a more rural voter, you know, possibly in a red community, possibly just outside a city. We spoke about people who work 8 hours a day and cannot make it to an office. But we also need to center people with disabilities. You know, there's a lot of barriers built into participating in democracy, whether it's showing up in person or navigating, you know, any kind of system. We're leaving people out who really, really, really need to be at that table.
Yeah, in this moment, we need everybody, all hands on deck, yeah, if we're going to save democracy, let alone talking about building a prosperous future for working people, just saving democracy in this moment. You know, which is why, you know, Joe Walsh was a congressman from this area for a while. We're buddies now because we both believe we should save democracy. And we both joke that I can't wait till we can go back to hating each other over policy issues, because I want to fight over things. But when you're talking about, hey, we got to save the country first.
Yeah.
That seems to be kind of an important thing.
I miss those fights over policy. I cut my teeth on the Al Gore campaign. I was very young. We're going to forgive me for that, but I got to tell you, I'm still mad about it. So it's interesting.
I'm still mad Al Gore was the candidate.
Well, yes. We're going to move on from that one, though, because that's, you know, 23 years of trauma now. Yeah. But like
trauma.
Those were the days, right, when there was a policy to fight about.
Yep.
And instead we're sitting here and you use the phrase save democracy, and you are right. It is literally just those two words, save democracy, save the democratic process, save a world in which everyone does have a voice and we're not. I'm looking for the right word, Rick, and I can't find it because I don't want to be too depressing on your show right now. I know people are going to and from work, and I don't want to bum them out, but where people aren't crushed.
So it's time where we need to engage, and this is a way for folks to engage, and this is a way for people to participate and feel that they're making a contribution. I think it's a great thing, and I hope folks will check out the website, getshire.com. Erica Chomsky is the Chief Strategy and Partnership Officer there at Shire. GetShire.com, the website. Last question I got for you. So you're at this big shindig. You got a little, got your little booth going on. Thoughts about the event? What are you hoping to get out of all this other than, you know, spreading the good word and spreading the gospel there? What's the thoughts?
This is my first Netroots Nation, and I am overwhelmed with joy. I'm also overwhelmed with a little too much espresso, but just the absolute joy in this room, the passion in this room, this willingness of everyone to show up, to do the work, and very, I think, importantly, to support each other. There are incredible activists and organizers in this room that my entire life, my entire career, I've dreamed of meeting the type of people in this space, including yourself, Rick. And it's
I feel honored.
Well,
I feel honored.
You're pretty special. What you do is unique.
That's what my mother
told
me.
Is powerful. So yeah, it's an honor to be here. It's kind of huge for me, honestly. It's inspiring and hopeful.
I appreciate you taking some time for us. Hope folks will check out the website, getshire.com. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. Erica, really great talking with you. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Rick.
I want to hear your thoughts. Is this something you'd get involved in? If it were that simple to help change the world and get someone helpful into Congress or into the Senate, maybe state houses from your couch, could you do that? I want to hear it. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break, right back here from Netroots Nation. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. This day in labor history, the year was 1863. That was the day that draft riots broke out in New York City. The Civil War had been raging for 2 years. For the first time in United States history, the government instituted a draft lottery. But for those with enough money, they could buy their way out of the draft. For $300, or more than $5,000 in today's money, you could remove your name from the lottery. This meant that the city's working class men, many of them Irish Americans, had to fight while the wealthy could stay home. Anger in New York City mounted. The anger was stoked by anti-war newspapers and politicians. The newspapers railed against the war and the draft. They also riled up fears that more black Southerners would come to New York because of Abraham Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation. Black men were exempted from the draft because they were not citizens. This further fueled anti-black anger amongst working-class whites. On the second day of the draft, violence erupted. First, the rioters targeted government facilities, but then they turned their wrath on black New Yorkers. White dock workers destroyed dance halls and boarding houses that served black patrons near the docks. A mob burnt down an orphanage for black children. But fortunately, the children escaped. 11 black men were lynched. President Lincoln sent federal militia to New York to quell the uprising. After 4 days of violence, the official death toll rose above 100, but the true number is unknown. The Martin Scorsese film Gangs of New York dramatized the draft riots. To this day, class continues to be a major factor in who fights and dies on the battlefield. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
About 150 years ago, General Philip Sheridan was sweltering in the relentless heat of a Texas summer. He was not happy. "If I owned Texas and all hell," he groused, "I would rent out Texas and live in hell." Summer has always been hot here, but 2023 has been something else, thanks to a hellish heat dome that has been baking us since late spring, sending daily temps up to 116 degrees. But worse, a more punishing heat has hit us from an even stranger, unnatural dome, the Texas State Capitol. That's where our malicious governor, Greg Abbott, and his GOP majority of extremist right-wing lawmakers rigged the rules to make life easier and richer for corporate elites and much harder for working people. In this year's legislative session, they rammed a nasty piece of plutocratic meanness into law that critics dubbed Death Star. It annihilates the basic right of local officials and voters to govern their own cities and counties. In particular, it empowers autocratic state officials and even corporate executives to nullify decisions by localities to protect workers and others from corporate abuse. In a cruel case of bad timing, the first local law targeted for nullification by the Texas GOP is a humane requirement in Dallas and other cities that developers provide 10-minute water breaks for construction workers. This in a state with America's highest rate of heat-related deaths and presently suffering biblical-level heat. Triple-digit temperatures kill, yet Abbott, his air-conditioned legislative cronies, and his corporate campaign donors whined that a required water break was, quote, an oppressive burden on the extraordinarily rich construction industry. This is Jim Hightower saying, here's a new rule I'd like to see. No lawmaker or lobbyist is allowed to oppose heat protections for workers unless they spend July and August with no air conditioning for themselves.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So welcome back to Netroots Nation here in Chicago as we continue our coverage of the big powwow. About 3,000-4,000 progressives coming together here in the city of Chicago to talk about how they can change the world, you know, make things better for working people. And that's why I've asked Cheyenne Schoen to come talk with us. She's a communication specialist with the United Steelworkers. And look, I love seeing my union brothers and sisters at events like this. Helps bring the tent a little bit closer together and bring people together and help us move in a better direction. Cheyenne, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, thanks, Rick.
So let's start. Your first time here? This first time comer?
Yes, first time at Netroots. First day of the conference, having a good time so far. A lot of people, a lot of progressives in one area.
Thoughts of what you're seeing? I mean, it can be overwhelming if it's the first time to something. There's a lot here.
Sure, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's fun to have everyone under one roof, everyone that we're used to seeing, some familiar faces and some new ones as well, making connections across the labor movement. We just had our labor caucus that we got out of, so it was fun to hear about the organizing victories that are going on.
Let's talk about that for a bit, because, you know when this first started, you know, I'm looking around, labor had a much bigger presence. There were a lot more panels on labor issues. This one doesn't seem to have as much as even last year or the year before. So I've had a lot of people go, well, you know, is labor not participating? What's going on? I'm curious, any thoughts on, is the movement just growing? Any thoughts on what we're seeing?
Sure, yeah. This is my first Netroots here, so I'm not sure what they did in years past, but, I have met Starbucks workers who are organizing. I've met folks from, BC, Vancouver, BC, who are working on organizing students who are at university there and people who work at the universities there. We're doing the same thing at the United Steelworkers right now. We're working on organizing the staff of the University of Pittsburgh. That would be the largest labor unit, bargaining unit in Pennsylvania in decades, about 8,000 folks there. So they're working on a huge campaign right now for that. So, if labor has a smaller footprint here, it certainly doesn't in the larger...
That's because you're busy out in the rest of the world.
Yeah.
I got it now. I think I figured it out.
Yeah, there's a lot going on right now.
Because there is a resurgence. I mean, when I was your age, labor was, 20-25% of the labor market. Mm-hmm. When I was in Cleveland, you couldn't trip over somebody who wasn't in a union or there had a family member in a union.
Yeah.
Now you're talking down 6.7% of the mm-hmm. private sector, 10% overall. Mm-hmm. It's getting a little harder. So seeing a younger generation enthused mm-hmm. about going, hey, this is how we make lives better, to me is encouraging.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that the pandemic certainly had an effect on people taking a step back and saying, we need protections that go beyond wage increases. I mean, wage increases are certainly important, and that's something concrete that we can point to. But it's a spectrum of health care. It's pregnancy protections for people who are pregnant. It's across gender and race. We're building up a movement here that isn't just focused on class, but around the spectrum.
And look, I just had this conversation a little bit ago. Because in this arena, there are people who have all of their issues. A lot of climate change, a lot of LGBT, a lot of transgender stuff, a lot of individual stuff that they've siloed almost themselves off. Mm-hmm. And I've often said that the one area that can bring all that together is labor. Mm-hmm. The one place you want to reunite this country, you organize the workplaces. Mm-hmm. You bring democracy to work, and all of that other stuff works itself out. Do you agree with that?
I do. I think a class-based movement is one that lifts everyone up from, from the ground up. It's not particular to race, gender, class, but certainly it encompasses those things, right? I mean, we're, for example, working on at the University of Pittsburgh, we're focused on making it so that there's more equity in the workplace. There's more inclusive policies.
Explain that.
Yeah, sure. So, we're working on one of the points there is making sure that accessibility issues for people who have learning disabilities or people who have staff members who have disability issues with parking. I mean, things that are come down to a basic level of parking, pronoun usage in the workplace, that sort of thing is what we're looking at.
Those things that in a democracy setting is something that you can work on if that's important to that bargaining unit.
Yes.
Because I look at my contract. My contract doesn't have pronouns.
Yep.
My contract doesn't care white male, black female. White, black, male, female, doesn't care.
Yeah.
Gay, straight, doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. The person who comes to work, does a job, gets paid this.
Right.
These are the conditions. This is all this. To me, that's the way we move forward, where mm-hmm. all the stuff that we divide ourselves on doesn't matter in this environment, mm-hmm. that we're all working for a common central goal.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping that's where we're kind of heading, no?
Yeah. I mean, I think the economic issues are certainly like the base of this. Yeah.
Here's my example. Mm-hmm. 30 years ago, we dealt with the transgender issue in my workplace.
Mm-hmm.
We'll call him Ross. Ross went away. It wasn't his name, but Ross went away. Came back about 6 months later. Ross was Rosie.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know who cared?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody cared. Because Rosie did her job.
Mm-hmm.
Rosie got the same pay, got the same benefits,
right.
Got the same working conditions. Didn't matter.
Yeah.
Rosie went and led her life. Everybody else went and led their lives.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where a lot of people, or at least I hope everybody wants to get to,
mm-hmm.
where you're going to lead your best life. You're going to be who you're going to be, love who you want, do what you want.
Right.
And it's not going to be tearing us apart.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that this is how we get to that place, because I want to get to a place where no matter what your issue is, mm-hmm. in the workplace, you're just like anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
You're not special. You're just like anybody else. You came, you do a job, you go home, you live your life. You don't get discriminated at work, in housing, in any of that. And I think we're a better society if we get to that point.
Right, yeah. Yeah, certainly. But I think it's also important to note that until we get there are steps that we have to take to get rid of that discrimination in the workplace, right?
No, and this is how we use...
Right. We use a class-based movement to do that.
Certainly.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
And that's why I think the labor movement is so important, and why I've been saying for so long, we do need to organize the workplaces. I don't think this is something public policy can do. I think we have to get down to the grassroots.
Yeah. People-centered, people-focused movement. I mean, that's democracy.
So what do you guys, obviously you're doing a bunch of networking and a bunch of organizing here. What are you hoping to take home out of this?
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping to meet other folks in the labor movement who are willing and ready and motivated to work together on bringing up worker power. I mean, that's what this is.
Absolutely.
This whole thing is about. I think it's nice to be with people who are on the same page and who can, connect and bring people together to bring people up.
No, this idea, and I talk about this on the show all the time, this idea of having an empowered worker gets you an empowered citizen.
Yeah.
When you feel that you have the ability to make change in your workplace, you're going to take that into the public square, and you're going to fight for things that are not only going to make your life better, but your community's life better.
Yeah, I mean, if you have ownership of your work and you have, you take more pride in what you're doing, if you have a say in your workplace, your working conditions.
So last question I've got for you. Again, I look at what you see here and how we can bring this together. Any thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, we're working on it. I think that every day.
That's the answer.
Every day there are changes that are being made. We're getting steps forward. We may get set back, but at the end of the day, I think that what we're doing here is working so that we can get this movement moving forward. And I think that we're seeing that across the labor movement every day. We're gaining power. Other unions are gaining power. SEIU, you know, we are working with across the labor movement to bring people up here.
And that's an important part there. You know, the fact that you said, I want to meet other unions and I want us all to come together. Because one of the things that labor gets knocked on is, you know, we're siloed off, much like, you know, yeah, people in this room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got ours and you've got yours and we shall not talk.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of building that idea of, you know, the old IWW, the old one big union idea.
Yeah.
There's a way forward.
Yeah, there is cross solidarity.
There you go.
Yep. Exactly.
Outstanding. But Cheyenne, I appreciate you sitting down with us.
All right. Thanks, Rick. Yep. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much, Cheyenne Schoen. She's a communication specialist over at the United Steelworkers. You can check out their website, steelworkers.org. Quick break. Right back after this here from Netroots Nation in Chicago. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1905. That was the day that revolutionary black scholar W.E.B. Du Bois helped found the Niagara Movement. It was named for the mighty current of change the group hoped to bring about. The initial organizing meeting was held near Niagara Falls, New York. During the Reconstruction period after the Civil War, African Americans had an unprecedented level of freedom. They were also involved in politics, winning elections for local and state political offices. However, when Reconstruction ended, those gains were quickly rolled back. W.E.B. Du Bois was one of the more prominent African Americans who opposed Jim Crow laws, which strictly enforced racial segregation in the South. At the organizing conference of the Niagara Movement, the group drafted a Declaration of Principles. Foremost among these was a demand for voting rights for black Americans. Another principle concerned labor rights. The declaration read, "We hold up for public execration the conduct of two opposite classes of men. The practice among employers of importing ignorant Negro American laborers in emergencies and then affording them neither protection nor permanent employment, and the practice of labor unions in prescribing and boycotting and oppressing thousands of their fellow toilers simply because they are black." This point recognized that the refusal of many unions to include black workers limited black economic opportunities. Managers pitted workers against one another along the lines of race to undercut worker solidarity and power. The Niagara Movement continued until 1908. That year, a race riot by white residents of Springfield, Illinois, the hometown of Abraham Lincoln, left 8 black residents dead. In response, Du Bois founded an interracial organization, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, which still exists today. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and the Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Welcome back to Netroots Nation here in Chicago. Hope you're enjoying the program. And look, again, you know, check out our website to make sure you get the latest on where we've been, who we've talked to, and, you know, some of the other stuff that we're doing here. But while we're here, I'm talking with Rebecca Ratcliffe. She's a statewide organizer for Fair Vote Illinois. The folks, one of the exhibitors, I believe. Rebecca, thanks for taking some time for us.
Happy to be here.
So what brings you here to this event? What is it that's got you here?
Yeah, so Fair Vote Illinois is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization, and our sole mission right now is getting ranked choice voting across the state of Illinois. So we are here to spread the word about that. We're also here with Rank the Vote, which is a national grassroots organization working on getting ranked choice voting everywhere. So, you know, no matter where people are, we're happy to have them sign up with us.
Good. So ranked choice voting. Tell me what this is. Pretend I know nothing. walk me through what you're talking about.
Yeah, ranked choice voting is a simple upgrade to the way we vote that gives voters more voice and more choice. And it does that by allowing us to rank multiple candidates. So first, second, third, if we so choose. Now, the reason for this is because with ranked choice voting, you need to have a candidate needs to have a majority support. So that 50% plus one to win. That's not always the case with our current system. With ranked choice voting, you get that. And because you get to rank multiple candidates, it makes it so voters really feel like they have a lot more voice in the election process. They never have to worry about something like splitting the vote between multiple similar candidates. They also get rid of the worry of wasting the vote, maybe if they want to vote for a lesser known candidate or a third party. So it's really...
So an example, if you know, there's someone, you know, on the ballot, there are three choices, you know, like say the Green Party, the Democrats and the Republicans. If you wanted to vote for the Green Party person, knowing that they're never going to win, you could do that. And then your second choice, you could rank, you could vote that way as well. And your vote would eventually count.
Exactly. Provided no one got to that 50% number in the first round, which a lot of times doesn't happen when you have more, when you have three or four, then it makes it so you don't have to worry about inadvertently helping someone else win who you don't want to win.
No, look, and then what's the difference between what you're talking about, ranked choice voting, and instant runoff voting?
So those are actually the same thing. There are two different terms that are used. Instant runoff voting is often, that's the term we use in places that have runoffs. So we are doing we're starting to do a big push in Chicago, and we'll probably often refer to that as instant runoff voting here, because in Chicago, we do have runoffs. In our last two municipal elections, the mayoral races have gone to runoffs. Tons of aldermanic races have gone there. So with instant runoff voting, ranked choice voting, it gets rid of that hassle for the voters, saves taxpayer money.
No, the reason I was going to bring it up is because of Chicago and Georgia. You know, I spent a lot of time in Georgia. They seem to be doing a lot of these runoffs. So having this ranked choice of being able to say, hey, you know, I want to vote my conscience, but I also don't want to throw my vote away. I think that's important. And then saying, look, you know, we should be going to the polls once. This all should be part of it. It seems logical, seems rational. How come we haven't done it?
You know, the main thing is just not enough people know about ranked choice voting. So that's what groups like Fair Vote Illinois are doing on, you know, for our state. And then there are groups on almost every other statewide level, because you do have to get this state by state, that are working on it. In Georgia, there's a group called Better Ballot Georgia that's definitely, you know, trying there so they can get rid of those runoffs that seem to happen every 2 years.
Yeah, because look, as working people, we ain't got time to go take a day and go vote and stuff.
Exactly.
It's hard enough getting people to get out on that Tuesday once every couple of years.
Yeah.
Or once a year, everyone should vote every year, every cycle. The most important elections are those ones that don't get any attention or any money. Those are the ones that, well, affect your life the most. And
definitely,
I think we need to keep talking about that. Everyone's going, oh, we're going to vote in the presidential. No, you need to vote in the off years and the off years as well, don't you?
Yes. But when we're asking people to come out multiple times for a municipal election, that's a really heavy ask. That's a ton of work we're putting on the organizers and everything that we just don't need to be doing anymore if we put ranked choice voting in place.
So what's the argument against this? And you're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Rebecca Ratcliffe. She's a statewide organizer here for Fair Vote Illinois. Their website, fairvoteillinois.org. We'll get links out on social media. I can take a look at that. So what's the argument? To me, sounds like a great idea. Should have been done all along. I can't believe we haven't done it since. What's the argument against it?
Yeah, there aren't really any solid arguments against it. There are.
Oh, come on. Conservatives. There's got to be a conservative argument to go, no, this is how they're going to rig the vote.
There are some people who are concerned that might be the case, but that's not reality. The one thing we will say that could be seen as a con is to fully utilize the ranked choice voting system. That does require a little more of the voter. It, you know, you can still just vote for one person if you like, but if you've got several candidates on a ballot and you want to actually vote for several, that means that you're going to have to do a little more research.
Isn't that what we want? Active, engaged?
I think that is what we want, yeah. But, I mean, you will have some people who say, well, not everyone's going to do that. And it's true that not everyone's going to do that. But I think we should be putting systems in place that incentivize that good behavior.
But if everyone isn't doing that, you know, shouldn't it matter for the people who are? Look, you can still pull the lever for the red hat or the blue hat.
Absolutely.
You know, you can look, if you're not happy with either red hat or blue hat, you can put Mickey Mouse in as your first choice and then vote for who you think is the better of the evil. No, I mean, because that's how I see this. There are times where I have voted for people for in elections where I don't like either candidate.
Yes.
But I'm voting for who's going to be the less evil, who's less bad.
And that's not a great position that voters are often put in.
Right.
And,
so this gives me an idea. Yeah. Hey, I can go, I know Mickey Mouse isn't going to win, but you know what? I'm going to go write Mickey Mouse's name, because enough of us go and write Mickey Mouse in. Maybe both bads get better.
Exactly. And we're able to start seeing with, you know, third parties or even not necessarily third parties, but maybe newcomers in an area. If they have really good ideas, we're able to start seeing the true support that exists for those ideas, since people are able to vote their conscience and everything. And maybe that starts to shift politics for our two parties, which we don't expect are going anywhere anytime soon. But right now, there's a real lock on those. It's a very binary system.
So let me ask you, now obviously this isn't just made up out of whole cloth. There are places that do this, right?
Oh, yes. So there are several countries that have used them for that have used ranked choice voting for centuries: Australia, Ireland, and then in the United States, Maine and Alaska. They're using it for all their federal, statewide, many of their municipal elections, and there are also over 50 municipalities throughout the states right now that have been using it.
I think somewhere in Louisiana, they've got. I think maybe New Orleans, maybe.
I'm not sure if they're somewhere in Louisiana.
I'm remembering, off the top of my head, that there was something like that, because you know it is working in certain places.
Absolutely, we have and we always do a lot of voter polling and everything in places where this is instituted. And what we're always seeing is that voters say they like it, it was simple to use, and they want to keep using it.
All right, for us to get more information, obviously fairvoteillinois.org is a place to go. Other resources that folks can find?
They could go to rankthevote.org if they are, you know, if they don't live in Illinois, and then they can get hooked up with another state.
Good things. Good stuff, Rebecca. Lastly, thoughts of the big event here, the big shindig?
It's really great so far. Yeah, this is the first day we're here, but just excited to meet more groups. And we've got a panel tomorrow from 2:45 to 3:45 where we'll be talking about ranked choice voting, too.
Looking forward to it. Sounds very exciting. Rebecca, yeah. I appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Rebecca Ratcliffe. Check out her website and her group's website, fairvoteillinois.org. We'll get links out on social media. Going to take a quick break. Right back here from Netroots Nation. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. Thanks for tuning in to The Rick Smith Show. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Rick Smith Show, like us on Facebook, Instagram, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can find all that and much more at thericksmithshow.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So spending a little time here at Netroots Nation, as look, you know, we look around this facility and the number of groups that come together to really push out the idea that we can have a better tomorrow. Everyone we've talked to, and I've spent some time talking to all the vendors, we've invited them to come over and talk with us. And again, if you miss any of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Also on the podcast section of the show, there are going to be a bunch of interviews that aren't going to make it into the radio show. And I don't want those to get lost. There are going to be a bunch of people that we sit down with over our time here that I think need to be heard, should be heard. And I hope you'll take a look at that as well. But, you know, you go through it, every person that we come across, without exception, you know, how do we do what we do better, and how do we make people's lives better. And when that's the true north, when that's your North Star, how are we going to make things better for average, everyday working people? That gets my attention. And it should get all of our attention, because ultimately, if you know, that old rising boat lifts all tides kind of, rising tide lifts all boats thing. We should be talking about how even the least among us are able to do better. Maybe even especially the least among us. You know, I go back to, you know, some of the conversations that we're going to have today and tomorrow. You know, for me, it's about, you know, how do we move forward? You know, I saw a tweet earlier today that has been stuck in my head. A Fox News guy from out west, was angry that his shot was ruined by a homeless person who evidently yelled at them. And, you know, I remember when there was the talk of compassionate conservatism, you know, caring about others, caring about the environment, caring about people. What happened to that? What happened to compassionate conservatism?
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK 1260 AM Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News.